Chapter 13, Section 3, The Burial and Resurrection. Friday, late afternoon.
Later, Joseph of Arimathea asked Pilate for the body of Jesus. Now Joseph was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly, because he feared the Jews. With Pilate's permission, he came and took the body away. He was accompanied by Nicodemus, the man who earlier had visited Jesus at night. Nicodemus brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 75 pounds. Taking Jesus' body, the two of them wrapped it, with the spices, in strips of linen. This was in accordance with Jewish burial customs. At the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden a new tomb, in which no one had ever been laid. Because it was the Jewish day of preparation, and since the tomb was nearby, they laid Jesus there. John 19:38-42. The women who had come with Jesus from Galilee followed Joseph and saw the tomb and how his body was laid in it. Then they went home and prepared spices and perfumes. But they rested on the Sabbath in obedience to the commandment. Luke 23:55-56.
Though Joseph and Nicodemus were part of the Sanhedrin, it seems they did not reject the evidence that Jesus was truly God. According to their traditional custom, they wrapped Jesus in long burial cloths, intermingled with 75 pounds, or 34 kilograms of aromatic spices, and laid him in a tomb. A large wheel-like stone, possibly weighing as much as 2 tons, was rolled across the front of the sepulcher. The women watched and then went home to prepare additional spices for the final burial. It was now Friday night.
The next day, the one after preparation day, the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate.
"Sir," they said, "we remember that while he was still alive, that deceiver said, 'After 3 days I will rise again.' So, give the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal the body and tell the people that he has been raised from the dead. This last deception will be worse than the first."
"Take a guard," Pilate answered. "Go, make the tomb as secure as you know how."
So they went and made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and posting the guard. Matthew 27:62-66.
This was no ragtag band of soldiery that was sent to guard the tomb. A Roman guard consisted of 4 to 16 men, each man trained to protect 6 feet of ground. Together, they were capable of defending themselves against an entire battalion. Sleeping while on guard duty was unthinkable, a crime punishable by death. Pilate instructed the chief priests and Pharisees to seal the tomb. Ropes would have been stretched across the large stone door and fixed in place with moist clay. The clay then would be imprinted with a signet ring. Any tampering with the rock would be immediately apparent. The guard was set in place on Saturday, the Jewish Sabbath. On Sunday, while it was still dark,
"There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men." Matthew 28:2-4.
It took only a glance for these rough and rugged soldiers to know they were no match for this one angel. The last phrase in the above passage is a first-century way of saying they passed out from fear. But they weren't the only ones shaking. The whole realm of evil must have been in chaos. It's not hard to imagine what it was like. Satan in confusion, shouting jumbled orders as demons scrambled in disarray. What a shock! Who would have dreamed that the tomb could be empty? Jesus had obviously come back to life. Impossible! In the meantime,
Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome bought spices so they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away.
Mary Magdalene apparently turned away in shock and dismay at the initial sight of the open tomb. She probably assumed the obvious. Jesus' body had been vandalized. Sobbing, she turned and ran to tell the disciples. But Mary and Salome pushed forward and entered the tomb.
As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You are looking for Jesus, the Nazarene, who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him."
Jesus was alive. The angel said,
"But go, tell his disciples and Peter. He is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." Mark 16:1-7. So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." Matthew 28:8-10.
Reading the record, you can sense the confusion and excitement of the early morning news. For those who had seen Jesus die, the report from the elated women was met with a great deal of skepticism. Initially,
they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Luke 24:11.
Peter ran to check out the tomb. John ran too, passing Peter on the way, but then waited outside the entrance.
Then Simon Peter, who was behind him, arrived and went into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the burial cloth that had been around Jesus' head. The cloth was folded up by itself, separate from the linen. John 20:6-7.
This was not the scene of a plundered grave. The long strips of cloth used to shroud the body were still wrapped as though around a corpse, but they were collapsed. Empty! The body had passed right through them. The head napkin was folded too, as if someone had tidied up before leaving. The Bible says Peter saw, but John saw and believed. For John, there was no doubt that Jesus was alive. But Peter's head was spinning. He needed time to think. It still must have been early morning when Mary Magdalene returned and
stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They have taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they have put him."
The tomb was located in a garden, so perhaps she supposed these angels were gardeners. Mary was so distressed that she did not think to identify the men. We must remember that Mary was grieving intensely and that the entire conversation was carried on through her sobbing.
At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. "Woman," he said, "why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary."
If one can say a name in such a way that it brings back all the memories of every previous encounter with a loved one, then Jesus did just that. Mary recognized the voice immediately.
She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher.
Now she had a different reason to weep. She must have flung her arms around him.
Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet returned to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord!" And she told them that he had said these things to her. John 20:11-18.
While all this was happening, the guards were hunting down the chief priests. There was no way they were going back to face Pilate.
While the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. When the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say, 'His disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep.' If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day. Matthew 28:11b-15.
It took an immense sum of money to persuade these proud soldiers to say that they had been sleeping. But it wasn't true. Once again, you can see the hand of Satan behind it all, rushing around doing damage control. After all, he is the father of lies. It was an anemic effort to save face. No doubt, Satan realized that he was defeated. Jesus, the Anointed One, had crushed Satan's head, just as God had promised way back in the Garden of Eden. Jesus had come back to life. He was truly alive, physically. For 3 days, his body had laid lifeless in the tomb, separated from his spirit. But then, in a dramatic demonstration of supernatural power, Jesus had been resurrected with a new body. Jesus had foretold his own death during his ministry.
"The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father." John 10:17-18.
Jesus' death had not been an ordinary one. For mankind, death is a consequence of sin, of breaking God's law. But Jesus had kept the Ten Commands perfectly. He was sinless, so he did not need to die. According to the law of sin and death, Jesus could have lived forever. So why did he die? Satan hadn't killed Jesus against his will, nor had the Jews or the Romans. Jesus had chosen to die, willingly. But why? The succeeding chapters will answer that question. The events of that early morn were just a beginning. Over the next 40 days, Jesus appeared to many of those who knew him best. But before we leave the resurrection day, there is one more account that must be shared.